Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
You should always be suspicious if the people in charge of safety don't want to see the safety data. That should be a red flag. I couldn't understand why people aren't looking at this data. Even the clinical trial for the Pfizer vaccine showed that the vaccine killed more people than the placebo group. It's supposed to be the other way around.
So, what's your name?
My name is Steve Kirsch.
Steve Kirsch?
Yes.
Okay. Where do you work? What do you work for?
I'm a journalist for Substack.
Substack?
Yeah. Okay. I have about close to a million followers on Substack.
So I've been called an anti-vaxxer. I've been called a misinformation spreader. MIT has labeled me a misinformation super spreader. And in fact, if you go Google, you type in misinformation super spreader, I'm the top hit in the entire world. Why am I labeled a misinformation super spreader? I have no history at all of being a conspiracy theorist. How do I go from being, hey, you should get vaccinated, waving the flag to I love Tony Fauci, to saying, wow, we've been lied to. How did that happen? I was vaccinated in March of 2021. My wife was vaccinated and all my kids were vaccinated. So you couldn't call me an anti-vaxxer. I've always gotten all these vaccines that the government has recommended. I've always trusted the government. And then I started hearing stories from my friends. So one person said that she asked me if the vaccines were safe. And I said, of course they're safe. And I said, why are you asking me this question? I mean, like, you know, have you not turned on the news? Like, where have you been? She said, well, three of my relatives were vaccinated and they died a week later. And they were all perfectly healthy before they got the vaccine. And I said, well, that's impossible. That must be wrong. And then she replied, yeah, but they're dead.
Wow.
Our goal with the Flyover Conservative Podcast is to be a bridge between 80 million people that we think are activated to be able to try to save this country, that are interested in the truth, that are looking for the truth, that are digging through the rubble and the rocks looking for the gold. And then the smartest people with the best ideas that have done the most work in private, and then to take them, put them in public, and to be able to share the best ideas with the people that are looking. If you're in that crowd, today's guest is a graduate of MIT, a list of incredible credentials, inventions, the founder of over 7 big tech companies, over 2 that became over $1 billion companies. And more than anything else, the thing I respect is of everyone I've seen has put the most at risk and walked away from the most in order to tell the truth. And I challenge you to find someone who is screaming loud that is actually have something personally at risk for what they believe. Today's guest, one of the smartest people you will ever have the opportunity to hear, except for you.
Oh, man. Close. Well, close. I received that.
Top,
thanks, babe.
Top 3 or 4 smartest people on this podcast. The one and only Steve Kirsch.
Yay!
Oh, that was awesome.
Oh,
excited to have you today.
For those joining, those cuts were taken from a documentary called Died Suddenly. It's tricky, but not hard, and definitely not expensive to find. You won't find it on YouTube or any of the censored-based platforms, but it's readily available for anybody that wants to put just an ounce of effort into looking into, hey, what other opinions are there out there? Why have I not heard these on Fox News or CNN? Or why is this not on Facebook? Why had nobody shared this information before? Go to rumble.com as a place that you can find that. Put in Died Suddenly. You can watch the trailer to the documentary
there. Had
millions
of views in less than a week. Pretty incredible.
Or close to 10 million just right out of the gate. And it's primarily, I would say, the centerpiece of the table setting, Steve, is you.
Well, there's a lot of great footage in that documentary, and you know, I encourage people to watch it. You know, even if you can just watch the 10 or 15 minutes of it, starting around 10 minutes into it, it's quite devastating. Mm-hmm. It's very convincing. Certainly hearing from the embalmers, I think one of the most convincing things is a room full of embalmers. And they were saying, have you seen these clots in your practice? And everybody in the room raises their hands about that in a room of more than 100. And then I got a fact check that was sent to me where this person said, hey, I'm going to fact check this with an authority. And the authority basically hung up the phone on them and didn't deny that all of that happened.
Wow.
So, you said an interesting thing there in the clip that we had, that you didn't grow up as a child in a home where, you know, they had a painting that said vaccine with a circle around it and a line through it. That wasn't your mindset, your culture, but you sort of came into this space, not from the medical field, but from the tech field, kind of like the Wright brothers sort of came into, air travel through the bicycle industry, not through NASA and Langley and the people they were betting on to have success in that field, but it gave you fresh eyes. But you're such a critical thinker, and you sort of ask yourself mm-hmm. the right questions to lead you to the truth in a way that somebody that maybe is blinded by the environment that they're in is not allowed to do. So talk to us about, how did you go from where you were in a short period of time? You said 2021, you were first in line to get these, to where you are now, where you're actually sounding an alarm and saying, people need to look at this.
Yeah, there were, David, there were actually two events that triggered it. The first one was the in the clip that you just played, where a friend of mine said that three of her relatives died within a week after getting the vaccine. That sort of triggered me to say that, whoa, there's something going on here. Either my friend is lying to me and is trying to game me, or the government is lying to me. It has to be one or the other, because it didn't seem likely that this could happen by chance. It's too rare an event. It's like a triple black swan event where right. you never expect to see that. And to see three black swans at the same time would be quite rare. And so it turned out less than a week later, my carpet cleaner comes to my door, and he's not wearing a mask. He is wearing a mask. And I'm giving him a hard time. I'm saying, hey, haven't you heard the news? If you get vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask anymore. And so even after my friend tells me the story, I'm still believing the narrative. I still haven't Wow. shifted. I'm giving this guy a hard time for not having been vaccinated. And he said, yeah, I couldn't get the second shot. And I said, why not? And he said, otherwise this conversation never would have come up, by the way. If I had not given him a hard time about wearing a mask, I never would have heard the story. So I asked him why he didn't get the second shot. And he said, well, after my first shot, 2 minutes after my first shot, I had a heart attack and I was in the hospital for the night. And he also mentioned that his wife had Parkinson's-like syndrome for about 4 months after she got her vax in the arm that she got the vaccine in. And at that point, I put two and two together and I said, this is statistically very unlikely. And so I started delving into the data. I looked at the VAERS data. I looked at other pieces of data. I looked at the clinical trials. And what I saw was a mess. I saw that the clinical trials actually showed that the vaccine killed more people, that there were more people died in the who took the vaccine than who in the placebo group. Now, vaccines are supposed to save lives. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to cause excess deaths. And so when I saw that data, and it wasn't even in the abstract of the paper. So the paper itself never said, well, there were more deaths in the group that got the drug than in the placebo, and it's not supposed to be that way. It just didn't even talk about that at all. And So, and then of course the VAERS data was off the charts. We've never seen anything like it in terms of the number of deaths reported into the VAERS system. And there are really only three possibilities for why the VAERS numbers could be so high. And what you're seeing on the screen is the total number of adverse events reported into the VAERS system. Now, some of those are from our foreign reports, but basically they're more than half of the reports in the VAERS system are from the COVID-19 vaccines, which have only been around for a couple of years now. And it is dwarfing everything else. There's basically more adverse events reported by the VAERS vaccine, or sorry, the COVID-19 vaccine in VAERS than there are the total number of reports in VAERS in the entire history for all 70 plus vaccines since VAERS was started in 1990, so 30 years ago. So
wow, this so if you're listening, there might be people listening too, Steve. So I just want to say the number that was highlighted there was 1,467,781 from COVID vaccine adverse event reports. So 1,467,000.
2,300,000. Total for everything else.
For all vaccines.
All vaccines.
Right. In other words, it's well over half are from one vaccine. In other words, this one vaccine has created more adverse events than all the vaccines in history combined.
Now, Steve, and it's underreported. Is that correct, Steve, that this is underreported, that they're saying it's only a fraction of actually what's actually happening.
And maybe you could explain the context of the VAERS system, how that works, and the time frames that they're allotted. I also want to tell our listeners, Steve's actually in the future. He took time out of his day. He's in Australia. So I don't know, how your day's going, but I'm really thankful for you doing that.
Yes.
And I want to also, maybe you address the VAERS. Can you also put it in context for people that are listening and they would hear Rachel Maddow or anybody else say, hey, these are safe and effective. There's been zero adverse reactions. There's been zero deaths caused because of the vaccines. And they're sitting here in this like, well, that can't be because there's been no problems with this vaccine. And they've heard that. They've heard that thousands of times. But the carpet cleaner friend or anybody, he's not able to post that on Facebook or share or anything, even his own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And so they probably have never heard that. Hey, there has been some glitches with this and people aren't even aware of these numbers. Many people listening have probably never even heard the word VAERS.
Yes. And, they probably haven't heard about this died suddenly group on Facebook because Facebook took it down after 300,000 members. Now, why would 300,000 people take time out of their day to find a Facebook group that nobody has ever heard of in a very short amount of time? Died suddenly group.
And there was like 20,000 joining a day towards the end. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was 20 to 30,000 were joining a day. And then they had to cut it short because they were finding they were being infiltrated by British intelligence who were then trying to use the group and make posts in order to get the group taken down.
Wow.
And so that's why they had to throttle the membership.
And that's organic. They can't run Facebook ads for something like that. No. That's not spun off of a Taylor Swift song anything else. So that's completely organic.
I would love to get 30,000 people a day signing up to my Substack.
Of course.
I don't have a fraction of that, and I'm basically trying to tell the truth about this vaccine. Yep. So why are 30,000 people a day signing up to a group like that? That's the question that Rachel Maddow needs to explain.
It's a great question.
But also is, why are there over, I don't know, I think the number right now is over 15,000 deaths in America that are reported into the VAERS system associated with the vaccine. Now, in a normal vaccine, you might have 100, 200 reports, but nowhere close to 15,000 reports. And so there are only three possible explanations for that. One is that somebody is deliberately gaming the system and just putting in phony death reports into the VAERS system. But HHS verifies each of the entries before they're published. And it can take a year before an entry is published in the VAERS system. From submission to being published in the VAERS system, it could take more than a year. We've seen these reports that come in more than a year later. In fact, there's some reports that were made right after the vaccine rollouts that are just now being published into the VAERS system. So people are taking their time to go and review these and publish them. So it's not gaming. So the second possibility is it's just over-reporting, that people are just more aware of the VAERS system and that they're reporting more deaths because they're just more aware that there's a VAERS system. And that's not true at all, because we have polled healthcare workers, doctors and nurses, and they're reporting no more often in the VAERS system when they see an event than they have in history. And in fact, there's one neurologist that I know of in California who has a practice of 20,000 patients. And that doctor has never needed to make a report into VAERS in her 11-year history as a neurologist. This year, for her practice, which consists of multiple doctors, they need to make over 1,000 VAERS reports. So you don't go from zero reports in 11 years to over 1,000 VAERS reports for one vaccine. You know, that tells you right there, it is not an over-reporting problem. It's in fact an under-reporting problem, because she's only reported 2 out of 1,000. And so the point is that VAERS is a voluntary system. So healthcare workers are not obligated to make the reports. And in fact, if you died suddenly 3 months after you got the vaccine, a lot of people wouldn't say, oh, that was the vaccine that caused it. You know, they might, and they probably won't say it, even if you died suddenly within 24 hours after you got the vaccine. They probably would say, oh, it can't kill people that fast, and it doesn't kill people, and I've been told so I shouldn't report it. So only a fraction of these adverse events are reported into VAERS. And at a minimum, we can calculate it using the anaphylaxis data that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine article, which looked at the anaphylaxis rates for the vaccine. And we compared that with the anaphylaxis reports in VAERS, and there's a discrepancy of 41 times. Now, anaphylaxis is always supposed to be reported, and it happens directly after the vaccine. And it's hard to miss. And so it should be reported 100%. And yet only 1 out of 41 cases are being reported in something that's so serious and so obvious. And so you have to think that for death, which is more serious, but it's harder to associate with the vaccine because the death doesn't happen immediately after. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it happens within minutes after getting the vaccine. But generally, death doesn't happen until 24 hours later or longer, and so it's less likely to be reported. And so you have to take the 15,000 deaths in VAERS and multiply that by at least a factor of 41 to get a true number. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're talking 500,000 people that have been killed by the vaccine. And then people would say, well, correlation doesn't mean causality, just because all of these people died after they got the vaccine doesn't mean that the vaccine killed them. And that's true. But you see, if it wasn't the vaccine that killed them, then what did kill them?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, and they're not willing to answer that question, because the numbers in VAERS that you expect to see for a typical vaccine, maybe 200 or so deaths reported. Now, there have been twice as many people who have gotten this vaccine than a typical flu vaccine. You know, I'll say, you know, that'll be generous. I think it's less than a factor of two. So even a factor of two, that might be, say, 500 deaths. But we've got 15,000 deaths. So those are basically close to 15,000 excess deaths. Mm-hmm. So if the vaccine didn't cause these people to die, then what did? And what's remarkable is that these people are all dying from similar causes, you know, in terms of the profile.
Yeah. What are you finding? What is the profile? What are they dying of?
Yeah, they're dying of intracranial hemorrhaging. They're bleeding in the brain. They're dying of myocarditis. They're dying of a heart attack. A lot of them will just die suddenly from a cardiac arrest. So there can be a yep. variety of it's either so cardiovascular
cause unknown.
It's a stroke, right? Okay. It goes to the brain. You die because the blood is cut off to your brain. Your brain is dead. Your lungs are dead. I mean, it's basically if you kill your lungs, your brain, or your heart, you're going to go pretty quickly. That's typically the final blow. And this vaccine is able to cause blood clots basically anywhere in your body that could cause you to lose blood to your lungs, to your brain, or to your heart. And when that happens, it's game over. And so we're seeing all of these injuries that are elevated in the VAERS system for this vaccine. And this is not background reporting. This is not from something else. If it was from something else, it would have a unique profile that would be specific. It's very hard to kill people, especially young people, mm-hmm. if you don't inject them with something. And so you're seeing deaths on a mass scale that we have never seen yeah. before. I mean, it is a massive scale. And the only thing that's going to cause that, it's not a, it's not like you got a, you know, you went to the restaurant and you ate tainted food, you know, mm-hmm. that had some sort of parasite in it or
right.
what have you that might have killed you. This is happening all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it's happening at the same time, and it's happening in massive numbers. And the only way you can kill people like Doug Brignoli, you know, this guy is, you know, the picture of health, and he dies in less than a week after he got the latest booster. Coincidence? I don't think so, because these sudden deaths, if you look into the sudden deaths in every case that I'm aware of, we can point to either the person was vaccinated or that he was likely vaccinated. In the case of Doug Brignoli, pictured there, this was not public knowledge. But we found someone who was a friend of Doug Brignoli and his girlfriend. And they were bragging about they're going to get mm-hmm. their COVID shots together a week before Doug was supposed to.
It's a famous case because not only is he incredibly fit, but he was such a proponent of fitness, and that was his industry and that was his field, and he was, you know, very transparent, you know, about the timeline of this, you know, on Facebook and social media. So there was a lot of correlation.
You know, what was interesting, Steve, and I just don't understand it is. You know, if someone dies suddenly, the common reaction would be, well, what happened? How did this person die? You know, they were in great health. Mm-hmm. They were in their early 30s. They were 40. Yeah. I mean, how did this person just die? But the question can never really come out. It's like they have like stopped people.
Yep.
You can't really say, were they vaccinated? Nobody can really ask that question.
You can't even really ask what happened anymore. If it's
no,
like a car
can't.
Wreck, you can't. It's, like, because
why
we know
would
people,
that not be a question?
How'd that get removed from the table? If I found out tomorrow that you died, I'd be like,
how?
You're kidding.
What happened?
I just talked to Steve. What happened?
Well, it's not disclosed, right? All of these deaths, they're not disclosed. Doug Brignoli's death, for example, I got a copy of his death report from the Los Angeles coroner. And he died face down on the floor. He died. So he's just like walking one day and he's like, he died face down. He just collapsed. Now, does COVID cause people to collapse like that?
No.
You know, not that I've heard of.
Not that I've heard of, you know, and yet the coroner lists the cause of his death because the coroner did a COVID test on him and it showed COVID-19. So he said, well, must have been COVID-19 that killed him. And that was the end of his reach.
That's not very scientific in its reach. Now, let me play devil's advocate for somebody that's listening right now. They'll be like, well, if you're trying to say that this government authorized, you know, all these scientists, Fauci, everybody else is a part of this, that they were so incompetent to create something that's killing people. Why doesn't it kill all of them, Steve? If it's so bad, why is it only 15,000? Why isn't it 150 million? How come everybody doesn't just drop right on the spot? Like, what do you say to that?
Yeah, well, look, everybody is different and everyone reacts differently to medical interventions. It's like, well, why do, when you take a drug, you'll read on the warning labels of drugs, well, you know, 1% of the, or, you know, 0.5% or whatever, some small percent of the people die after or getting this drug because they have a pre-existing condition that is exacerbated, or maybe they had a drug combination, or their body just reacts differently. Now, there could be some issues in terms of how the vaccine is delivered, whether it was delivered, for example, into the muscle, or whether part of it got into the bloodstream directly. And so that's a game of chance. Did they get we'll call it a tainted or a bad batch of the vaccine? Now, a bad batch could be a good batch in that the mRNA is intact and it was actually doing its stuff. Mm-hmm. And then if it's perfectly intact, then it's causing your body to create spike protein everywhere, and that could cause you to die. So when people talk about a bad batch, it may actually be a good batch in terms of its mRNA that is totally intact. And there was a lot of evidence that shows that the regulators knew that the mRNA instructions that are being delivered by these vaccines was not intact. In fact, the latest report showed that I saw from the regulatory agencies showed that the mRNA had disintegrated substantially in most cases, and there were no cases at all where the mRNA instructions were 100% intact when they were delivered. And so I don't know what it is today, because nobody has shown me any reports showing me that when they inject you, that the mRNA in the vials is 100% intact. Have you ever seen an analysis of these vaccine vials where they look and they do gene sequencing on the mRNA instructions in the vaccines and show you that in fact, yep, it's 100% intact in these vaccine vials? No, because no one's allowed to do any quality control on these vaccines. It's literally like playing Russian roulette. You don't know what's in those vials. You're not allowed, it's government property. You're not allowed to take that property and find out what is inside the vials. Mm. And that should concern everyone,
definitely,
especially with all these people dropping dead in plain sight. Now, the thing about died suddenly is that people are dying in plain public sight, and that cannot be covered up. They have to report the deaths. And so I just, in my Substack, I reported the death of a 30-year-old crypto CEO. Mm-hmm. And this guy is 30 years old. He looks like he's perfectly healthy.
Yep.
This guy doesn't look like he's in a wheelchair or he's got, multiple comorbidities or anything. And this guy just dies in his sleep and he's 30 years old. And one of the doctors I talked to, I asked about that. He says, look, young people never die in their sleep. Mm. It's not like never. It's just like, it's really rare. It's like, you'll never see a case in your medical career of a young person dying in their sleep. And now we're seeing the cases of famous people who are young, who are dying in their sleep, or who are getting these, like Justin Bieber and his wife, both of them are getting these neurological or cardiovascular problems that should never be seen, maybe there's a chance that Justin might get it, or his wife, Haley, might get an issue. But the chance that they got, that both of them, they're celebrity, both of them, they're married, and they both got issues, they've both been vaccinated, man, that's just really hard to explain.
Yeah, it is. And now, Steve, why is it affecting, does it seem to affect young men or young men, adult men, more than it does other people? Like, I've seen, like, maybe from the age of 18 to like 35 or something.
There's a good picture of Justin there.
Have you heard that? And do you know why?
Well, there's certainly myocarditis has a higher incidence for males around 16 years old. And so that's well known. And what's not widely reported, of course, is that the rates for myocarditis and heart damage in young people is more like 1 out of 3. So there was a study in Thailand that didn't get a lot of press in the United States, but it's a highly respected study. Vinay Prasad actually did a really nice YouTube episode on the Thailand study. Just really well done. And he was lamenting at the end. He said, why are they doing this in Thailand? Why can't we do this research in the United States? And the research is simple. It basically takes your parameters and looks at your various blood biomarkers before you get the shot. And then they look at you after you get the shot. Mm. And they compare. And what they found in the Thailand study is that it was 29% and change, so almost 30%. We'll call it 30% of the young people had markers of cardiac injury after they got the vaccine, 1 out of 3. And wow. You know, in some cases, this could be considered not to be serious, and in other cases, it's more serious. But 1 out of 3 had cardiovascular health markers that were adversely impacted by this vaccine. And of course, nobody in the United States is commenting about that.
Even I've heard you talk about menstrual cycles being messed up as well in women.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me just mention that myocarditis rates in young people, there is a hospital in Canada where one of the workers basically said, hey, look, the rates are now over 100 times higher after the vaccines rolled out in young people than they were before. Now, this is difficult for anyone to explain. And of course, when you ask that hospital worker to appear on camera, they say, can't do that, I'd lose my job.
Right.
Yeah.
And you hear that all the time, that people are not allowed to talk about it, meaning the vaccine. And so there's a hospital worker that was in a meeting, and they were discussing the Died Suddenly movie, and they were talking about these clots. They're not blood clots because they're not made out of blood. They're amyloid protein, and they're talking about the clots, and they were saying, you know, that's misinformation, and blah blah blah. And this person said, well, actually, it's not misinformation because I actually know one of the embalmers that was featured in the film. And in fact, I have seen these clots myself live. And they said, if you continue to badmouth the vaccine, you will be fired.
Wow.
Wow. Just by saying he saw one himself?
Yeah.
Okay.
You basically cannot raise the issue whether the vaccine is safe or not, or you will lose your job. So you have to remain silent as a healthcare worker. That's the more troubling thing.
That's
in America, we're not allowed to talk about this.
Yeah.
Steve, I want to jump a little bit. If you can, I'd like to hit Israel and kind of the leaked recording, you know, that came from there. If you can mention that. I want some of these things to sort of be like just open doors. People can walk in there whenever they want. They go to stevekirsch.substack.com. You can read a lot of the information on there for free. You get a newsletter. I don't know if it's daily. Sometimes it's a couple, but I've subscribed for a long time. Love it. Gave it as a gift today to somebody. I'm like, hey, you know more than I do, but here, see what this guy's putting out. You must have a staff of people just gathering what's going on in South Africa. What's happening here? What's happening there?
And just me.
Oh, wow.
Well, you work like a freak then to get that all out there.
Yeah, I do. Let me tell you.
So the Substack, you can subscribe. You can get the premier edition. I don't know what it's called, but it's like $5 a month. You know, it's like not even a cup of coffee. And you get access to more information than you could ever go find on your own. And it's just cut up and put in a blender and like baby food and is fed to you. All you gotta do is just show up. All the hard work and heavy lifting is done. So that is a resource right there. And then your website is the crown jewel of what people want to find. It's I believe it's skirsch.io. Is that correct, producer Colton?
Yeah. On the screen. Yeah. But I'd say that all of all the material I've written really in the last year or so has been on my Substack. I started it last October, and I've written about 1,000 articles. And so that's really
Wow. 1,000 articles.
But as we're listening to these things, I want to come to get to the Israel thing. I want to get to also just the putting your money where your mouth is, your dare, your sort of taunt for somebody to try to debate you, which I think is just gangster right there, even though nobody's taking you up on it. But let's talk just a little bit about this process. There's people that we trust. Anybody with a stethoscope, that's why even if you're an actor and you're selling, you know, painkiller, you know, you have a stethoscope, you put that on because all of a sudden it's like guards go down. I trust this guy.
Credibility
instantly. The whole healthcare mechanism, we're programmed to trust these people. And we know that they're not off just winging it and saying, hey, eat peanut butter and that'll cure this. Like, they had to have studied. There's somebody supervising them. There's an authority figure over that person. There's probably third-party agencies there to monitor the people that are monitoring, that there's checks and balances and things here to keep Dr. Frankenstein from going crazy over here and people doing their own thing. So let's talk about Grace Lee just a minute. It kind of brings us to that place. This big institution that we're programmed to trust, what's happening there, and why are they allowing, why do you have to come in from the tech community and try and hold these people accountable when that was their job to start with?
Yeah, so it's a dirty job, but nobody in the medical community wants to do it because nobody in the medical community wants to get in trouble with the NIH, and they don't want their funding to their institution to disappear. So when you have someone like the NIH, which is doling out money and is saying the vaccine are safe and effective, if you oppose that, you run the risk of your institution being blacklisted. And, you know, Tony Fauci is still there. He's controlling the purse strings. And Tony is I've heard he's a vindictive guy. And so if you cross him, don't expect to see any money for your institution and expect to see your grants denied. And if you play by his rule book, then expect to see lots of money going your way. And so when you have something like that in power, people are tend to look the other way. Now, in the case of Grace Lee, she is at Stanford. She's a professor at Stanford, and she's also the chair of the ACIP committee. The ACIP is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices of the CDC. So this is the sort of the buck stops here, last stop committee. In order to get approval of a vaccine, you have to get past her committee, and she's the chair. And so when I found out about the Israeli safety data, and this is basically the Israeli government finally, after a year, decided to take seriously the collection of adverse event data. So they started collecting data. They tasked a group of outside experts to collect the data. The outside experts reported in that these vaccines are not as safe as the Israeli government has been telling people, and that they're subject to legal liability for lying to the Israeli people about the safety. Mm-hmm. And so what the Israeli Ministry of Health did is they ignored the study and they said, hey, there's nothing to see here, folks. But so then what happened is a tape of the conversation was made without anybody's knowledge. And that was leaked to the press. And the Israeli Ministry of Health has acknowledged that that tape is legitimate a Reuters fact checker asked about that. And the legitimacy of that video was confirmed. And the video basically says, hey, this vaccine is causing all of these side effects, and they're not short-lasting either. Some of them haven't resolved. In fact, in depending on what it was, in a lot of the cases, there's one where 60% of the cases, these side effects do not resolve. And so this is hardly all of the minor, the side effects are minor and short-lived. Right. That's not what the research actually found. The research found that the Israeli Ministry of Health was lying to the Israeli people. So they basically covered it up. And then when it was leaked to the news, only GB News in the UK covered it. Nobody in the in Israeli press covered it. It's very, the press.
Is it because it's so uninteresting?
Yeah.
It's not newsworthy?
It doesn't affect anyone. You know, no. But you know, the other point is that only I think it's like 1.4% or maybe it's 2.4%. I forgot the number, but it's very low. Maybe it was 2.4% of the people in Israel are considered vaccinated. In other words, they haven't taken the latest vaccine. 98% of the people haven't taken the latest vaccine. Now that in itself tells you something, yep. Especially in Israel, where the Israeli people typically always follow the advice of their government and they always trust their government. To have a 98% non-compliance in Israel should be telling people something is going on.
Yep.
And they were the first out of the gate with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had one of the highest compliance rates in the world. So how are they going from one of the highest compliance rates in the world to one of the lowest compliance rates in the world?
So tie this into Grace Lee. How does she get into this story?
So Grace Lee, I try to get her attention. I try to say, hey, because I know the journalist who has the video, and I arranged for that journalist to talk with the Epoch Times, who wrote a bunch of articles about these Israeli tapes. But it was important for the U.S. regulators to know about that. And all of my attempts to get the regulators in the U.S. to look at it, the Israeli data, I sent email to over 300 or about 300 people at the CDC to say, hey, you know, we have the Israeli safety study video. Would you like to see the video? Nobody at the CDC wanted to see the video. That we contacted,
and all
these are no one. These are 300 people in vaccine safety. So this is a list of close to 300 people at the CDC involved in COVID vaccine safety, and none of them wanted to see the safety data. So I contacted Grace Lee, and I sent her an email and tried to reach out to her, and she didn't respond to that. So I got her phone number and I texted her and she didn't respond to that. So I tried to visit her at her office at work, and she said they told me she didn't work at her office. She worked from home. So I went to her home, which is where she works, and knocked on her door. She lives 10 minutes away from me. So, you know, why? Super convenient. So I drove over there and a couple of times, and first time knocked on the door, no answer, knocked on again, left. So came back another time because, you know, it's important for her to be made aware of this. And maybe she gets like, you know, thousands of emails a day like I do. And it's just, didn't break through the noise. So I show up on her doorstep. I ring the doorbell. Nothing happens. I ring the doorbell again. So I'm there for 20 minutes, ringing the doorbell, knocking on the door. No answer. And so finally, exacerbated, I leave a note on the door. I say, you know, it's a handwritten note. It says, Dr. Lee, you know, would you like to see the safety data from Israel? It's important. Lives are at stake. Just yes or no. And so I put the note on her door. And then as I'm leaving, I'm greeted by two members of the Palo Alto police force.
And I think you're being very gracious in this. You're not being bombastic or, you're not threatening to glue your head to her door or something. You know, you're not one of these kind of protesters. You're actually just like, Hey, we're both trying to help humanity here. Would you look at this? Very gracious.
I'm just trying to make sure that she knows about it. Cause you know, clearly the emails hadn't worked. And so, and text messages to her private cell phone didn't work. So, and I know they were delivered because, you know, you get the confirmation they were delivered. Yeah. So, you know, maybe she's just too busy to read them all. I don't know. So the police officer says, you know, who are you? Why are you here? Have you ever talked to Dr. Lee before? And I said, yes. And he said, so what did you say? Or what did she say to you? And I said, well, she said, Mr. Kirsch, you have 3 minutes. And this is because I'm a speaker at the ACIP. I've been a speaker at the ACIP committee meetings, and you only have 3 minutes to speak. So that's the only thing that she said.
Oh, that was the time.
Yeah. Pierre Torrey just thought that was the highlight.
Of that's so funny.
Yeah. Well, I think it's frustrating for people to know that the people, when you're standing in front of a hospital, it's intimidating, and you're trusting someone. You should there's checks and balances. There should be checks and balances, you know, in the mortgage industry, in the banking industry. There should be checks and balances in our school system. Mm-hmm. You know, who's overseeing, you know, the NEA, who's overseeing, like, the person who's in charge of being a outside source looking in should be vigilant and tireless and just a ravenous appetite for truth. Mm-hmm. Turn over every rock.
Right. She should have been rushing to her door to greet me and thank me profusely for bringing this safety data to the attention of the committee, because that is her job. Her job is to go and find if there's a safety problem. She should be the first one to know about them. Instead, she calls the police on me so she can avoid answering the question, do you want to see the safety data, yes or no? Because she can't answer. That's a question you can't answer. Because if she says no, she doesn't want to see the safety data, then she looks bad.
Right.
And if she sees yes, if she says yes, I want to see the safety data, then we say, great, let's show it to you and you know, in a group setting and get your reaction to it and discuss it. So she can't answer that question, yes or no. And so her answer is basically, let's call the cops on him so that we don't have to answer the question. And the cops said, you know, at the end of it, the cop said, you know, officer, I've done nothing wrong. He said, yep, you're correct. You're free to go. You've done nothing wrong. You have broken no laws. And so then the cop then hands the note to Dr. Lee and her husband, who then answer the door. When the cops ring the doorbell, they answer immediately. And so the cop hands her the note. So I have proof of delivery.
Mm. Yep.
I have proof.
Well, it seems like there's a big setup. You know, we live in Missouri, and we had a cool little meeting happen the other day in Jefferson City, which is our capital, and that is, you know, Anthony Fauci graced our state with his presence, and the guy has no memories of anything. He literally, you know, you probably have seen the transcripts or watched. You know, it's like never. Are there any studies saying masks are safe and effective? Masks are helpful. I'm not aware of any. I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I didn't, but you know, it was like Oliver North or something, you know, back in the day. Yeah. So I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then they helped his recall by prompting him. He said, yeah, okay. So, you know, I sent that note and, you know, so forth. So, you know, it's funny how he has, when he's on CNN, he has no problem recalling what happened with Zika and what happened with
sharp as a tack.
He's like in encyclopedic knowledge of every infection, you know, everywhere and exactly what happened and all of the facts and figures. And once he gets into a deposition, he can't remember anything.
No, it's so true. So the final question we would have for you, Steve, in the next 60 seconds is, what is the breaking point? Where do we go from here? You get this information, you're trying to deliver it, people don't have it. What's the breaking point? What do we do?
At what point do they have to look at this? And at that point, is it so bad that nobody wants to look at it?
Well, yeah. You know, if the Senate were in Republican control, which may happen in 2 years now, the next time, then Ron Johnson would have been head of the committee to investigate this, and that would have blown the doors open. We came so close to the Republicans controlling the Senate. That would have flipped it. But the Republicans control the House. And there's a guy in the House, Kevin Kiley, who is very aware of what is going on. But he's new. So he doesn't have the seniority of other people. But if Kevin can make a difference and other people can make a difference in the House, we may start to see some hearings. There's Joe Latipo in Florida. And I have told Joe.
Yeah, he's the Surgeon General for the state of Florida, correct?
Yeah, Surgeon General for the state of Florida. And I've let Joe know that the death safety signal in VAERS has triggered. And the CDC has said nothing. And when the CDC was questioned about that safety signal being triggered, they said, oh, well, that analysis that the safety signal was triggered was done by a third party, and we're not responsible for third party analyses. But trust us, if there was a problem in the VAERS system, that we're on top of it and we would let you know about it. And we rigorously, you know, da, 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 da. And it's a whole PR pitch, right? But you see, they never respond to the allegations that the safety signal was triggered. And if this is not the correct calculation for the safety signal being triggered, then what is? Now, I've had multiple statisticians independently validate that the safety signal was triggered. And I am now having somebody, a former university professor who has to remain nameless because he doesn't want to be fired from his job, And he's going to be creating a video instructing the American public how they can validate that the death safety signal was triggered in VAERS as well, so that anyone and their brother can go and validate for themselves that the death safety signal was triggered in VAERS. And hopefully we'll force the CDC to respond to that. Or if Joe Latipo has the staff say, hey, could you validate this for me? And it would show definitively, and then he could raise the issue. As a public health official, he could raise the issue that my staff has validated the safety signal, the death safety signal in VAERS. They validated it was triggered. How come you guys haven't said it was triggered? And that will then force the CDC to respond directly to this rather than saying, well, you know, we can't comment on that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just ridiculous, because what that calculation shows is that they're not looking at the safety data. And even when it is called to their attention and a high-ranking official has to answer the question, they basically don't even want to look at the data. They don't want to look at any safety data. They won't look at the Israeli safety data. They won't look at any data that shows that the vaccines are unsafe. And that should cause anyone in America to really freak out about that their totally CDC, agree. Which is supposed to be watching the data, is not watching the data. And now we have absolute proof of that. That is uncontestable. It is in plain sight. Those numbers and the calculation, the formulas for calculating the safety signal is in plain sight. Anyone can make that calculation. And everyone who does shows that the safety signal has triggered. And when you ask the people who would debunk, people like me, who debunk these so-called anti-vaxxers like me, or misinformation spreaders like me, they won't touch this calculation with a 10-foot pole. They refuse. I even offered to pay them one of them $1 million if they could say if they could show that I was wrong, and they turned it down. They said, "Hey, you know, too busy to look at that. Don't want to look at that." You know, so this is something that's untouchable.
You put your money where your mouth is. You invented one of the first search engines. You took the mouse from being a rollerball to an optical eye. You know, you've done all of these incredible things. And I challenge people out there, if you're going to throw a rock at Steve, what are you personally doing? What are you personally doing that puts you at risk, to put your family's finances at risk, to put your reputation at risk, your job, your potential to earn it? What are you putting at risk for what you believe in? You know, because this guy's got it on the line, and it's because he cares about the people that are also alive on this planet during his watch, and he's accountable to that. It's inspiring. You guys go to stevekirsch.substack.com. Check out the documentary. We'll put the link down below to Died Suddenly, where you can go and check that out. Begin the process. This is too important to leave it up to people like Grace Lee and others that may or may not be, you know, vigilant on watch for your best interest, for your children's best interest, for your family, for your loved ones' best interest. So again, go to Steve Kirsch, KIRSCH.substack.com. Stay in the loop. There's going to be things breaking a week from Tuesday that you're going to want to know. And a week after that, that's where you can get it. Steve, would you come back to our podcast again? I got about three cards here of notes, of questions I didn't even get to that I'm dying to ask you. You got too much in your brain to cover in one episode.
Sure. Yeah. My pleasure. Happy to do that anytime, David.
We would love it.
We love it. Thank
you
so much,
Steve, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Buckle up, put your tray tables in the upright position, and get ready for today's economic update with Dr. Kirk Elliott.
Hey, how's it going, David? You're flying solo.
I'm flying solo. I'm without adult supervision, but that's okay because we know exactly what we want to cover. Last week, we did this show. We had a panel of experts. We had Seth Holhouse, geopolitical expert. We had Josh Reed with kind of crypto expert. We had yourself, two PhDs, understanding economics and the global markets. And we hit everything about FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried. I mean, we walked through all the relationships, how everybody in there is related to somebody that's supposed to be regulating these you know, the SEC chair, you know, everybody is tied into, supposed to be monitoring that, and they're not. And it was just crazy stuff in this cryptocurrency world. And we got a lot of feedback, a lot. This thing got shared and repeated and shared and woke people up and sent them down pathways. I got to talk to you real quick. Here's the biggest question that we get. We know when somebody invests, they get money is fake. They just print it. It's like IOUs, like in the movie Dumb and Dumber. You know, it's like, hey, what's this? $315,000 for a Lamborghini. It's like, oh, that's an IOU. I'd hold on to that one. It's like, that's the US dollars. It's a shoebox full of IOUs that, you know, come from a homeless guy. Silver is a physical thing. This is real silver. I can verify it. It's worth, you know, say $20, $22, $23 or whatever, you know, right now. It's probably not going to go to zero. It's been worth something since Jesus was here. It's going to be worth something next year. You can melt it down and turn it into a tooth if you want. It has value, you know, in manufacturing. This FTX thing, those guys went bankrupt and they lose billions of dollars at a pop. And I say lose. If I were to lose this pen, that means it's no longer my hand. It's somewhere around here. These guys lost billions of dollars and it's not somewhere around here. How did this happen? How does that, people put dollars in and they're gone. They don't have a thing because they don't have a thing. How did this happen?
Here's the thing. So that show that we did, it was awesome because it just showed all the tentacles that are coming out of this and how it's spreading and who's potentially involved and who it's going to affect. Right. But yeah, I've got the same question that you're getting is why did this happen?
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty simple. It was like a Ponzi scheme is what it was. So FTX, was in corporate terms, it was a chaotic mess of over like 100 different companies, you know, all united under the ownership of Bankman-Fried and his co-founders. Right. So,
yep.
So then, so they have these basically four main silos. They had a venture capital arm, which invested in a bunch of other businesses, which on that show that we did of exposing this, we talked about who some of those other businesses were. And they weren't really good businesses. They were mostly political nonprofits, right? Which is kind of what they were. They had a hedge fund. They traded crypto for profit on two exchanges, one domestic and one international, right? So they have these four silos. Well, the revenue streams that came in, why did it collapse? Because they had a token called the FTT, which is like a Bitcoin, right? It's like, but it was their token. And it was basically a share of FTX that the company issued itself, and then they promised to buy back using a portion of its profits. But documents were leaked to CoinDesk that suggested that Alameda, the group's hedge fund, which was basically run by this guy's girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
Were making risky loans and effectively trading using the company money, right? But was it really the company money? Yes, because FTX is in the Bahamas, right? But they couldn't receive bank wires. They can't receive wires. So instead, they would send all the money into Alameda Research, and then Alameda Research would actually get it over into FTX because it was like a sister company, right? Here's the problem. The money never, ever, ever made it to FTX. $8 billion of customer funds never made it into FTX. And so what were they doing? Well, they're investing in all these different companies, these nonprofits, they're doing their thing, they're building their political empire, their whatever they're doing, it was just never there. Well, how did they find out about it? Well, because one of the major holders of FTT, that coin, was the rival exchange Binance, which is owned by that guy CZ. He exposed it.
The Chinese national living in Canada, I believe, right?
Yep.
He's the biggest player in that. An exchange, explain exchange real quick, because people send those guys money and they put it into whatever you request.
Yeah, so
they're the money lender, so, money changer, basically.
So it's like this filter, right? So US dollars go into the exchange then buys cryptocurrency. So the exchange, you could buy FTT, their token, you could buy Bitcoin, you could buy all these different things, right? So the exchange in like Coinbase or something like that, right? It's like an exchange, but for the crypto world, like the New York Stock Exchange has all these different company stocks on it. So you put your money into Schwab or Merrill Lynch or whatever, then they buy the stocks from the exchange, right? That the exchange is just a mechanism for you to exchange your money for something right. else. So in this sense, FTX was the exchange to buy cryptocurrency. Well, Binance held a bunch of these FTT tokens, wanted to sell it. Well, guess what? Wasn't there, right? They figured out it wasn't there. So then that caused a run on it. People scrambled to withdraw all their funds. And then in the medium term, in the short and medium term, it collapsed, not just because so many people were wanting out at the same time. It collapsed because of it was basically a Ponzi scheme, because all of the money that was wired in, $8 billion worth into Alameda Research, never made it in to be invested in the FTX crypto coin, you know, FTT. So what does this mean for other cryptocurrencies? I think it's going to mean a lot more regulation down the road. People like crypto because it's there's not a ton of regulation on it. Well, that's going to about to change, I would say. Because when you have the second largest exchange in the world, it goes belly up. You know, the guy, Sam, the owner of it, went from $16 billion net worth to zero in a week. It's like, oh my word. I mean, that's a big loss.
It happened quick. 72 hours, people were pulling, it basically a run on the bank. Same thing could happen to our banks. If everybody went and wanted $500 actual cash to sit there, if you wanted to give out $100 bills to your kids for Christmas or something like that, if everybody went and did that, like, I don't know, $500, $400, $1,000, whatever, but there's not a pile of cash in the back room at a bank. They don't have that much. No. It's just numbers in a computer. They could do a run on that just as easy as they did this, because it's not, again, I kind of come back. This is a thing.
Yeah.
Our money's not a thing. FTX was not a thing.
So how can these investors get their money back?
Yeah.
Well, even Bankman-Fried convinced that it would take $8 billion of an injection of capital to actually make everybody whole. Is that going to happen? Well, no. I mean, the guy's probably going to jail. This exchange is like, I think it's gone belly up. So some people will get something back, but most people have lost their money, which is why I want to shout it from the rooftops. If you're going to invest in something, do what you just said. Invest into something that's real, that's tangible, that's there, that you can take delivery of it, so you don't have to mess with yep. these kind of games.
Yeah, buy plywood, buy nails, I'm somewhat tongue-in-cheek joking there, but if you would have bought $10,000 worth of 2x4s instead of FTX, and what's happened in the retail market, you would be a lot better off, because those things have all skyrocketed. If you would have, over the last 10 years, if you would have bought Texas Roadhouse and not Google, you would be better off as a stock. It's just it's a crazy stat. And that's in spite of me eating all of their peanuts when I go in there. I don't know how they're even making a profit. And so, you know, it's an interesting time, but you need to have something that's something. That's what these guys help you out with Dr. Kirk Elliott. He has two PhDs. We've known him for over 25 years. His dad was a mentor of Stacy and I when we were first married. These guys take care of you. They know what they're doing. Flyvergold.com just gets you into their world. There's videos that you can watch. We just created that as a landing page. It gets you onto his site. Fill out a little bit of information, your name, number, how they can get a hold of you. They set up an appointment. They have a conversation with you. What are you trying to do? You got an IRA. You got a cash investment. What do you want to do? It doesn't take millions of dollars to get started. You can incrementally do it for a year and a half. We've consistently moved out of fake money into something that is real money. If you look at the global debt chart grid, the time clock thing going, silver should be over $700 for 1 ounce. It's currently a little over 20. Okay. It's steadily increasing. It's the most undervalued thing that you can buy when the markets stop being manipulated like they are now. This is where you're going to want to land. The FTX thing is the tip of the iceberg of what's happening in the fake money world. The US dollar is not much better. Call 720-605-3900. That gets you into their world. 720-605-3900. Or just go to flyvergold.com, put your name and number in there. Do it quickly, because you want to be ahead of what is coming. And you owe it to your family. This is a legacy kind of move that could set you up to be in a much better position as things kind of crumble around you. Dr. Kirk, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for all the things you do in private to study in order to share this stuff in public. I would share, I love that you're not your grandpa's PhD with the corncob pipe and the elbow patches. You got the Bible verse tattoos, you know, and like you're on the edge of what's happening. You understand crypto. You understand these things. And I'm thankful for that. I really appreciate you in this time.
Are you having a hard time sleeping at night thinking, what are you going to do about your finances?
If you went back to 1920 and you had a $20 bill and you had 1 ounce of gold, you could go into a men's clothing store and you could buy an entire suit, the jacket, shoes, pants, belt, everything. Today, what would that $20 bill buy you? It wouldn't. You couldn't buy a handkerchief for the $20 bill, but that 1 ounce of gold would still buy you, even today, it would buy you an entire men's suit, shoes, belt, pants, jacket, everything. That's the difference. But today, that change is happening faster than ever.
And we know a guy by the name of Dr. Kirk Elliott that we've known for over 25 years. He has two PhDs.
This is who we're actually using. This is who our friends and family are using. And he's a guy we trust completely. And in today's era, you need somebody you trust. So go to flyovergold.com and learn how to protect yourself against an inflating dollar.
For more great content, go to flyoverconservatives.com.